I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
It's another edition of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Justin Cuthbert, Julian McKenzie, and Julian, we have officially entered the dead zone, the blank space between the NHL's trade deadline and the start of the playoffs, where most games seem a little less important and the news dries up rather fast on us podcasters.
Dead zone. I like that. Highway to the dead zone. That didn't work out as well as I thought I would have liked it to work out.
No, I mean, it's not too late to start over, but I think I'm going to have to force us through this so that musical interlude lives on forever.
You know what? I can live with that. I've done more embarrassing things. Like, say, the Montreal Canadiens at the beginning of the year was the best Montreal Canadiens team I've seen in my life. I think that's worse.
I mean, we're definitely going to get to that. We're also going to get to a brand new segment at the end of this podcast. Oof. Which we will unveil, because I learned a little something about the podcasting game or radio game this week. The reason to return, the RTR, and I want to provide an RTR for our listeners here at the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. So we're going to do a little radio trick at the end of the program, and we'll hopefully carry that on all the way through. But before that, we got to get to the headlines, or the, you know, the lack of headlines. Actually, there's a decent amount to dig into, a little residue from the trade deadline and a couple other things. So we're not exactly scrambling yet, but sooner than later, we're going to have a little less to talk about, at least until the playoffs start. But for now, as I mentioned, we got a decent amount to dig into, and we're going to begin with Taylor Hall, who, of course, was traded to the Boston Bruins from the Buffalo Sabres. And, of course, his start with the Boston Bruins has been quite good. He's got 2 goals in 3 games. More importantly, all three of those games were victories for Boston, and 2 came over the New York Islanders, so it's not exactly like they were beating up on poor competition. He should have had an assist in there as well, but he got that taken away from him. But playing on that line with David Krejci and Craig Smith, Boston Bruins look like they got something cooking. What's your immediate review of Taylor Hall's start in Boston?
Is anyone surprised that Taylor Hall found success on a really good, I mean, I'm not going to say really good, but a good Boston Bruins team? They've been one of the better franchises for the better part of a decade plus. Like, I don't know. This is just my view here, but I'm still stunned at how so many people looked at Taylor Hall, and I understand there's the salary cap constrictions that are around, but so many people were willing to be like, man, I would not touch that guy with a 10-foot pole or whatever. This is a guy who, if you put him on a wing, and maybe you don't necessarily make him your focal point, if he's your second line winger putting in goals, that's a pretty good spot to put him in. And yes, we're looking over a small sample size of 3 games, but doesn't surprise me at all that Taylor Hall has seen some success on, a good Boston Bruins team. I've said it on this podcast before, players who go from crappy situations to better ones, they know how to, they should be able to elevate their game. And just being around better players, just you want to be as good as those players. So I think Taylor Hall, I'm not surprised that he's found some early success, not to mention the fact that you mentioned off top here, the fact that they beat the New York Islanders, a team that will more than likely make the playoffs, could do some damage as well. Remains to be seen how much of their facial hair we'll see in the playoffs, but we'll leave that for another day. The New York Islanders are a good team. So they didn't beat any scrubs in those games. And Taylor Hall was a key contributor in some of those games. So I think Taylor Hall, the fact that he's in Boston, he's doing well for himself, at least to start. I'm not surprised. It's a pretty good, it's a good start for him.
Yeah, it's a great start. And you mentioned it being unsurprising. Yeah, it's completely unsurprising. In fact, it's very predictable. Why? Because Boston, you know, is a good organization. Things work out from them. And things just tend to blow up in the face of the Buffalo Sabres, a poorly run organization. Already, Taylor Hall has matched his goal total from his time with Buffalo, you know, more than half a season. Got 9 shots in those 2 games. Of course, he's rehabbing those shooting percentage numbers at a reasonable rate. It's not like everything he's touching is going in right now. It's just exactly what you expect when a good player is shooting at 2.8%. But I think the more important, you know, underlying numbers, or at least the data we're getting from his start, is that line has been tremendous. And that's been, I don't want to say a problem for Boston, but it hasn't exactly been a strength, that second line. It seems like David Krejci has been sort of on an island for a long time, but they've always seemed to try and be in this position, or they seem to be in this position always, where they're trying to get someone to play in there and be a dominant factor for them. That's maybe one of the reason why this is a team that hasn't won the Stanley Cup, despite being elite and being very close on multiple occasions, because that second line isn't as impactful, certainly, as the first line, but not even close, like not even on that support level there that it needs to be. But they have 71% expected goals in 29 minutes coming in, a couple actual goals, which is more important, and none against. it's exactly what they needed, it seems, is that impact player from that secondary role. And I think for Taylor Hall, the hot start is very important just for him. Like, obviously, the production is great for the Bruins. This is a player we talked about, his confidence level being shot. And if it didn't come immediately in Boston, maybe he's thinking, well, maybe it's not going to work anywhere. But immediate success for him, that bodes well moving forward and to improve the headspace that he's been dealing with. If you have Taylor Hall clicking, then it means Boston is in a better position. And they look very much like a team that could win that East Division. Not in the, you know, the regular season standings, because Washington seems to be out in front and in control and not ready to let up. But Boston's going to be a nightmare for whoever they play in the postseason, that's for sure.
I agree. And to just to add to your point about Taylor Hall here, the fact that he's going to be on a second line and not on that first line, and there's a lot less pressure on him in the situation that he's in, for him to be able to kind of start off this way, you're right. It does kind of lift a lot of weight off of his shoulders to start. Can you imagine that? Like a Hart Trophy winner. I mean, say what you want about Taylor Hall. Say what you want about players who've won the Hart Trophy. This guy won a Hart Trophy a few years ago. He is a goal scorer. He can produce in those moments. And the Boston Bruins were just – so it was just easy for them to just kind of add him to their team. Yes, maybe the fact that the new movement clause that he had kind of made it a little easier for the Boston Bruins to kind of be there and made it a little difficult for the Buffalo Sabres to kind of trade him anywhere else if they really wanted to. But I don't know, man. That's just – the Boston Bruins, I don't know how far they're going in the playoffs, man, but Taylor Hall can finally put himself in a position where he could foresee a lengthy playoff run that can go more than like 5-6 games. This is a good Boston Bruins team. I mean, even if they go up against a tough Islander squad, this is a series, if it kind of ends that way, it could go 7 games. He could be a key contributor for this team. Again, he's not in a position where he has to be the guy. And he's wanted to not necessarily be that focal point anyway. So I just think for Taylor Hall and the Boston Bruins, it's just, again, off a small sample size, it's looking like a pretty good fit. And I mean, the Buffalo Sabres, it's blowing up in their face, but imagine some of the other teams who maybe looked at Taylor Hall's file and maybe just thought like, man, like, you know what? I don't think we should have gone for this guy at all. Maybe they might have, but not buyer's remorse. I don't know what the opposite term would be if you don't end up buying something. And I guess it could still count as buyer's remorse. We'll just say buyer's remorse for this particular instance.
I think they get your point.
Yeah. That's enough here. You know, I think, and again, fine, small sample size here, but how do you let a guy like that, who you know can put up points in a top 6 role, just kind of go off to the Boston Bruins of all teams? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I would have picked up the phone on him if I was a GM. And I think a lot of teams, especially in that Eastern division, I don't know, man. That's just – I don't know how you let that guy just go for basically peanuts on the dollar. We're in an era now where Nick Foligno was able to get like a first and a third and a few other pieces, but like Taylor Hall was worth a second and Anders Bjork.
So it's working in the immediate term. We're confident it's going to work out in the short term. Does this work out in the long term for Boston too? I mean, if you're Taylor Hall, you've played for bad organization after bad organization after bad organization. And now you've got the taste of what it means to be, or what it's like to be on a great team, on a team that is well-run, oiled unbelievably well. Are you going to be looking to leave for that extra $500,000, that extra $750,000 if, you know, Boston is involved in long-term contract negotiations? I don't think so.
I don't think
someone who chose $8 million and the possibility of getting moved over for this season is going to make that mistake again. So this could be one of the unbelievable moves for the Boston Bruins if they can have him make a difference this year and then convince him on the culture, the atmosphere, and all that, and have him stay around at a reasonable number when players, I believe David Krejci, Tuukka Rask, those guys coming off the books, a little bit of money to spend, and a guy who probably is not going to miss the forest for the trees here in this offseason. I just think this is another, you know, stroke of brilliance here for the Boston Bruins. In a contrasting situation, Montreal Canadiens seem to be buckling under the pressure a little bit. Boston made one move, and it looks like it's going to be a great move. The Habs have made a ton of moves, and it seems like now they are just throwing acquisitions at a very real problem. Like, whoever they could have gotten over the last 6 months, yeah, we're going to fix it with this. We're going to fix it with this. We're going to fix it with this. And that's normally how it's done. You want to see aggressiveness, and you want a team and a general manager to identify these holes and try and go after it. But now, in hindsight, it all seems a little bit haphazard. Like, it just seems like, okay, we went out and got this guy, this, but nothing actually fits. And since Brendan Gallagher was removed for the lineup with his injury, I mean, you look at the lineup, it's like, wow, there's talent on every line and pairing, and the goaltenders are solid. Like, what's going on? And the story isn't being told by the depth chart, because you look at this team's on-ice performance, and most recently, an ugly loss to the Ottawa Senators on a matinee game on Saturday, now 4-6 in their last 10. It looks like a team that's ready to cough up the playoff spot that seemed all but guaranteed to them. If there was any competition behind them, it seems certain that they would not make the playoffs. So where do you grade out this Canadiens team, the team that's playing in your backyard right now, Julian, at this point with, you know, a handful of games remaining?
Like, this team has been wildly inconsistent for the better part of, like, 2 months. So I don't know how to grade this team. I mean, you mentioned the fact that they've only got 4 wins in their last 10. You know who one of those teams they defeated in the last week was? The Toronto Maple Leafs. They beat the Toronto Maple Leafs, a team that we've pretty much considered as the class of the North Division. And then they followed it up with their performances against Calgary and Ottawa. And I know a lot of people have been are willing to be like, hey, well, you know, the Canadiens played the Flames on Friday, and then they had to move over to Ottawa to play a matinee game. It's like two games in quick succession playing in the middle of the day. Like, I'm sorry, but if you're the Montreal Canadiens, and you're, especially if you're a fan of that team, and you're looking at those two particular teams behind you in the standings, I think fans have every right to be frustrated. And I'm sure Mark Bergevin probably feels that way too. This is a team that he invested heavily in the offseason with the moves that he made. And with the coaching changes that he did with Claude Julien, just getting rid of Stefan Waite, the goaltending coach as well, you could tell Mark Bergevin was in a situation where he's like, you know what? This has to work. This has to work. He's making moves to make something stick, and he's feeling that pressure. The one thing that has to be frustrating as well is you add players up at forward, the Josh Andersons of the world, Tyler Toffoli, who's hit the 20-goal plateau. And after all that, Brendan Gallagher, they really miss Brendan Gallagher. The fact that
it all falls apart with Brendan Gallagher coming up. That's what it seems like.
Look, you explain it to me like this, because I've been thinking about it for the last few days, and I put a tweet out about this. Is this not a flaw for the Montreal Canadiens? If you go out and you make investments to your forward core, and you get guys who can play on the wing, and in the hopes of establishing depth, because Mark Bergevin has made it clear he's all about getting depth guys, whether it's, you know, you have your guys up at forward, you have your guys up at defense. A guy like Brendan Gallagher, who, yes, he is seen as the heart and soul of this team. He fights because of the fact that, you know, he's a little smaller guy than some of the other guys in the league, but he'll go to the net, he'll go to dirty areas, he'll do everything you need him to do. But I don't think Brendan Gallagher should be seen as the reason, as the raison d'etre for this Canadiens team to actually perform well. Like, the fact that he's plucked out of the lineup, and you mentioned there's talent on almost every line on this team, and they still can't produce, right? It's ridiculous. Jake Allen has been busting his butt for a good chunk of the year. There's like four other goaltenders who've had worse run support in front of him. Carey Price was playing his first game in how many days on Saturday, let in the three goals, then the empty net near the end. It was well rested, three goals and 14 shots, but like, geez, the Canadiens were just not able to score. I think the fact that the Canadiens are so reliant on Brendan Gallagher, even if they made all of those acquisitions at forward, it's flawed. And you have to be frustrated if you're the Montreal Canadiens. You invested in this team as much as you did to ensure that if a guy like Brendan Gallagher goes out due to injury, you have other guys who can fill in and do well. And as of late, it hasn't looked that way.
It's interesting because the Brendan Gallagher thing, okay, the immediate reaction was, okay, this means Bergevin's even going to be more aggressive here and he's going to go out and shop. And I guess he did shop a little bit, but it was more to replace the depth you lost with Victor Mete getting, you know, walking across to a rival in the Ottawa Senators through the waiver claim. But you mentioned the inconsistencies, and like, the inconsistencies didn't arrive when Brendan Gallagher went out. They've right. won 12 of their last 32 games. This is a playoff team that's won 12 of their last 32. I mean, that is dark. Like, that is not a good team. A good team does not win 12 of 32. It's certainly one that expects to contend when it matters most. And again, it doesn't make too much sense when you look at the lineup, but the, you know, throwing acquisitions at the problems looks like it might happen again here, because Cole Caulfield is up from, you know, he signed his contract. He's playing for Laval. Like, is he going to be the latest acquisition or add or new body that's going to come in and be thrown out a problem here? And is it going to do anything for this team if Cole Caulfield does, in fact, get in the lineup and play a role this year?
I just think if you put Cole in that position, that's just so much pressure to put on this kid. Not to mention the team has said that I think it would take an injury because of the salary cap issues that are there. It would take an injury for either him or even a Jake Evans, who's actually played more games this year, obviously, for him to get inserted into the lineup. I don't know if the Canadiens do it. I think the fact that they have him there, for added context here, the Laval Rocket are not scheduled to play again until the end of the month. They're actually on a layoff. So I think this is just kind of like a nice thing for Caulfield to be able to kind of be around the big team, see what it's like to live the everyday life as an NHLer. But I just think, considering the pressure that's on this team right now, and the fact that as more and more games go on, they find themselves in a bit of a race where the Flames are catching up on them, I'm not sure if inserting him into the lineup is necessarily the best thing. I would imagine you want to put him in a situation where there's little to no pressure, but the Canadiens and the Flames are going to play each other like three times over the next few days. It's a bit of an intense time for the Montreal Canadiens, not to mention the fact that they just have not been playing all that well. So I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily in agreement, just in my humble opinion, about just throwing Cole Caulfield at the problem. I think he still needs a few more pro games under his belt, and the American Hockey League is the best possible place for him to be able to learn. But to kind of just throw him into the NHL, you're kind of throwing him to the wolves. And you could think of other players in the Montreal Canadiens organization who have come through who have been in similar situations. Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who probably could have used more seasoning in the AHL, maybe in Finland, now playing regular NHL minutes, you could argue that he could have been in a situation where he could have used a bit more time. Victor Mete, who's now in Ottawa now, that's another guy who probably could have used a bit more time before he was called up to the big club instead of being thrown onto a defensive pairing with Shea Weber. I think if you put Cole Caulfield into the lineup right away, I mean, hey, Ryan Poehling's another example. He had probably one of the greatest debuts you could ever have as a Montreal Canadian, and everyone penciled him in as a number four center for next season, including himself, and was very disappointed when he realized, whoops, that's not going to be the case. And now he's back in Laval, and now he has to kind of go through it again and eventually put himself in a point where he can be an everyday NHLer. But I think if they put Cole Caulfield in the lineup, while it wouldn't surprise me considering how desperate they've been all year, it would just be a potential repeat of mistakes they've done in the past. So I don't see any reason for the Canadiens to rush him at all. Just take your time. We know he's a good player, but the Canadiens don't need to rush him.
Well, you know what they say about desperate times, and we're definitely approaching that for the Montreal Canadiens. They do have two games versus the Oilers, which I'm actually not sure how they've fared against the Oilers this year. Has that been one of the more positive matchups? That's been one of the...
Actually, believe it or not, we've raved about Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl for a good chunk of the year. The Montreal Canadiens have pretty much shut them down to this point of the year, which again, speaks to how wildly inconsistent this team has been. The Montreal Canadiens have struggled and labored against the Calgary Flames and the Ottawa Senators, who are behind them in the standings. The Montreal Canadiens, again, in the last few days, have a victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. And when they've played Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, they have shut them down. In fact...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Off the top of my head, I don't think either of those players have scored against the Montreal Canadiens this year. Neither of them have scored. Almost every time they play against those two players, for whatever reason, they're both struggling to hit the back of the net against the Montreal Canadiens. I think even the last time they played against the Oilers, that was when McDavid was just so frustrated, he shoved a forearm into Jesperi Kotkaniemi's face.
The
Canadiens, for whatever reason, have found a way to frustrate Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. They can say they've gotten wins over the Toronto Maple Leafs at different points in the year. Hey, they even found a way to get wins off the Winnipeg Jets too. But the Calgary Flames and the Ottawa Senators, for whatever reason, nothing. Just absolute frustration. It's ridiculous.
So, I mean, potentially that's a good thing. Maybe Montreal matches up well against Edmonton. Maybe they can get three or perhaps 4 points before they go into a three-game set with Montreal. Just based on the matchups, or back to the matchups for 1 second, I am noticing something with the Canadian division, with Winnipeg maybe not being a great matchup for the Maple Leafs. Like, they could give them fits. But then Edmonton being dominant against Winnipeg so far, and then Montreal being... you know, faring pretty well against Edmonton so far. So it seems like the rung below seems to be a little bit of a problem for each. And how that all shakes down, well, I guess if the playoffs started right now, it'd be Edmonton and Winnipeg. So maybe Edmonton does get the better, and the Leafs avoid potentially Winnipeg in the second round. I don't know how it's all going to go, but it is interesting how the matchups seem to be shaping up, and how different teams fare against each other. But again, what matters for Montreal right now is 3 games against the Calgary Flames coming up. I believe it's over a four-day span, 3 games, beginning April 23rd. That might decide who goes into the playoffs as the number 4 seed in the North Division when we do indeed get there. Speaking of getting there, Patrick Marleau has finally got there.
Wow.
He's going to surpass Gordie Howe in terms of the NHL record for games played. He played in his 1,767th game on Saturday in a loss to the Wild. He can break the record set by Howe who played across four decades, which is crazy. Monday night in Vegas, good place to celebrate. What do you make of Patrick Marleau's career, just in a general sense? I'll just open the floor because it's time to talk about Patrick Marleau, given where he's at in his career.
I think that is one of the cooler records you could ever have for yourself. And I always thought of Patrick Marleau as a really good forward, a really solid player to have on any team, and San Jose can speak the praises of Patrick Marleau and what he's done for their franchise. I just think it's cool that, like, he's spent all this time in the NHL and he's played with, like, what, like 37% of the league's players throughout their history. Like,
that's nuts.
Like, that's insane. Like, put it this way. Like, when you tell the history of the National Hockey League, it's impossible to tell it without Patrick Marleau. And he does not have a Stanley Cup to his name. That's probably the biggest shame with Patrick Marleau. But a lot of guys throughout the NHL can at least speak to how good of a teammate he was, and especially in his later years when he was in Toronto, and how some of the younger players kind of adapted to him. Like, he's a really solid player. He's a great player. And I think the fact that he has that record is just, I think it's really impressive to me. The fact that you're able to play all those many games speaks to the mostly clean bill of health you've had through much of your career, and the longevity you're able to have. That's not easy. It's not easy even to play 1,000 games in the National Hockey League, much less the amount of games he was able to play through, what, three teams? So San Jose, Pittsburgh, and Toronto. Like, this is incredible. I think it's one of the cooler records. Yes, for sure. But I think it's one of the coolest records for any NHL player to have. And, I mean, it's not just anybody who held that record previously. We're talking about Mr. Hockey, right? So I think that's one of the cooler records to have.
Yeah, it's an amazing accomplishment. I mean, this guy has literally been in the NHL for our entire conscious lives, you and I. I mean, you were probably in diapers when he first made it onto the scene. And it feels like guys like Alexander Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby have been around forever, but this guy is almost a decade on both of them, like a decade more than guys who have been, you know, staples. Again, I said conscious lives. I don't remember a time when Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby were in the NHL. Like, it's been that long for those two guys. This is going to show my cynicism, though, because I laughed this morning a little bit when I saw the headline Marleau ties record in Sharks loss. Because I think that tells the story of the late portion of his career, honestly. Like, he's doing something incredible, but it's not contributing to anything bigger than that. Like, if the Sharks were a great team right now, I don't think he'd be playing. And then he'd be looking for a spot to play, and I don't know if anyone would have given that opportunity. I mean, apparently he's shopped at the deadline, but no one wanted to take the flyer on him. And, I mean, everyone gets to that point in their career, or most players get to that point in their career, unless you're you know, the rare few that can go out on top or go out, you know, without any regrets. But it seems like his chase for this has been more important than winning a Stanley Cup to him, at least in the last few years. And I find the situation a little bit strange, and I don't know how he'll actually be looked back on when all is said and done. Like, I don't know what's going to happen this summer. I don't know what's going to happen in terms of his legacy, but you can't take away the fact that he's played more games than anyone else. And that is obviously a major, major accomplishment. And I shouldn't take away from that. But I just don't know where this stands. Like, when he's done, when he breathes that sigh of relief, when he finally accomplishes his goal Monday night, what's next? Will the Sharks have any reason to take him back next year? Would anybody else be interested? I don't know what it means for next season. And I don't know what this record means in terms of the Hall of Fame. Is Patrick Marleau a Hall of Famer? For me, no. I don't think Patrick Marleau is a Hall of Famer. I think this probably gives him a chance to have a plaque or a little space carved out where his jersey from his 768 or 1768th game lives there forever. Sure. But I think the conversation is naturally going to shift now to whether he's a Hall of Famer. And I say no, because I don't think he's ever been in the conversation as one of the best players in the world. Like, in his time, he's, you know, been one of the handful of best players in the NHL, but not, you know, challenging for major awards. His highest point total was 86 in a year. I think it was 2005, 2006, where seven players hit 100 points. Joe Thornton had 125 points. So he was getting a lot of that. So this has made me reflect on his career a little bit, and I want to give him, you know, you want to give him all the credit in the world for this record. But in terms of like where he's at in his career and where we'll think about him in the future, I don't know. There's just something that seems to be missing for me.
I can understand where you're coming from with that. I'll say this about the record. If you're in a position like Patrick Marleau, where you're on a team that is not really going to go far, and you're not really in a position where a cup contending team might necessarily be willing to take you on, I mean, what else are you going to shoot for, right?
If you're,
within striking distance of a record like this, hell yeah, you go for it. So, I mean, I don't blame a guy like Patrick Marleau for thinking about a record like this and be like, hey, you know what? Like, let's go for it. Let's see if we can get it. I do have to agree with you with the fact that I'm not sure about what this means for his Hall of Fame candidacy. You're right in the fact that it does, that if you look back on his career, you can say at different points, like, yeah, you know, he's been a part of a handful of really good players, but has Patrick Marleau ever been like a top 10 player in the National Hockey League?
Not for me.
No, a top 15? Has he ever been top 15 in the league? Maybe, but like not top 10. And I think, like, you know, and maybe it's different for certain guys, but I think that's one thing that's going to hurt him. I unfortunately do not have hockey reference in front of me. I can't even name any individual accolade that he's had in his career. Never won a Hart Trophy. I don't think he has an Art Ross to his name. Like, he doesn't have any of those significant individual trophies. And I think if you want to give yourself a chance at the Hall of Fame, like, you have to be able to have that. I think for him, you can always say Patrick Marleau was a solid and a good player in his heyday. And you can look back on some of those really great San Jose Sharks teams where, fine, they didn't make it to the end, or they got dispatched at some point in the playoffs, but he was a part of some really good San Jose Sharks teams. And some of them were pretty fun to watch. So I guess for you and I, if we look back on his career in the 2000s or whatever, we'd be like, yeah, he was a really good player. But, I mean, if he's not a Hall of Famer, it's not the end of the world, I guess.
Yeah, it's okay to not be a Hall of Famer. Like, yeah, it's not a big deal.
That's it. Well, I mean, look, it's a big deal, but...
It's a big deal, but it's not like... It shouldn't be like... I don't know. I don't think anyone's like waiting on this to happen for him to become, you know, whether or not he's a Hall of Famer, like immediately triggers Hall of Fame status when he plays in this game on Monday night. And I think the debate is definitely there, but I just feel like he was never a truly great player and never stood out amongst the crowd. And I don't think longevity should just immediately give you the opportunity to stand out in anything other than longevity.
I agree, but let's at least end it with this. The fact that he's able to achieve this record is amazing and incredible. Yeah. And, you know, he could always say he has that. He can always say that he was a part of some really great teams. He played in the Olympics. Did he get an Olympics in?
He got in there.
Oh, come on. Like, yeah. Like, he at least can say he has that to his tally as well. Like, come on. Like, he won, you know? Like, he can look back at his career and say, you know what? I had a damn good career. Maybe it didn't end with a Stanley Cup. It might not end with a Hall of Fame berth for him. But he can say he won an Olympic gold medal. He can say that he played all of these games. He's played with some really great teammates. Patrick Marleau can look back on his career and know that he wasn't a scrub. I mean, look, there are guys who have played in the NHL who are scrubs. I'm sorry to say it. There are guys who are scrubs. But there are guys in the history of the NHL, maybe they weren't good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. Maybe the Hall of Very Good is their ceiling. But Patrick Marleau can say he was a damn good player in the NHL, and nobody has played more games than him. That's something he could keep for the rest of his life. That's fine.
Well, good news for Marleau, if he's looking to extend on that record that, again, he will have on Monday night, is that there's 23 roster spots opening in the NHL next year with Seattle coming in. So maybe the fact that he seems like he's only probably in the league because of this record, if we're being honest right now, maybe that he gets a little bit more life based on the fact that there are more jobs next year. Okay, let's move on. Just a little bit of news from what was, again, other than the trade deadline, not a very newsy week. But the possibility with the situation here in Canada worsening in terms of COVID-19, we've had the Toronto Maple Leafs deal with COVID-19 scares. Obviously, we know what's going on with Vancouver. Montreal has dealt with it. Like it, the walls closing in, the inevitability of all this, as we've talked about before, it seems to be headed there, and vaccines are not going to be put in place in time for this, for, you know, everything to, for us as a society here in Canada to stem the tide here. It seems like we're going to have to go down into some pretty drastic measures in order to stop the spread. And where does the NHL fit into drastic measures? Well, right now they're just being able to continue on playing. But it's possible that the NHL or the Canadian government or a combination of both decides that playoff hockey is just not going to happen north of the border when it was the vehicle last summer. It might not be an opportunity this summer, with Elliot Friedman reporting on Saturday night that it's possible that, well, the preference still is to go city to city for the playoffs, but it's possible that the all Canadian teams just go to a city in the United States, play inside a bubble in the United States, and then once one team is remaining, that team goes city to city, city to back to whether it's Buffalo or whatever, when the playoffs continue with just one Canadian team. Just on the surface, it's a bummer, right? Like there's going to be one Canadian market that's going to go three rounds in the postseason. And when a Canadian market goes three rounds in the postseason, there is so much excitement across the country, but certainly in that city following that team. And I know we're not going to get fans in the stands. I know we're not going to get fans in the streets. I don't know if there's a possibility for a parade, but that's probably not going to happen just because of the situation we're in. But that really takes even just the hockey games happening in the city. Even if there's no fans there, even if there's no fans outside, it's still a different buzz, I think. Or it will be a different buzz. I guess we don't have precedent here. But this is certainly a bad news for Canadian hockey fans who are having, you know, what is going to be an exciting playoff run for someone sort of diminished in a way. Likely.
Yeah, it's just... it's a bit of a tough situation, but of course it's the price you pay. It's funny, it's interesting to say price to pay, but if you're playing professional sports in a pandemic, these are the things you have to consider. And another thing you brought up with all those teams who, if a team were to go three rounds, it's fans in the streets, fans in the stands, revenues for those teams as well. Remember, those teams are not really going to be recouping too much over the next few months, even if they do go long in the playoffs. I guess a bubble for them, I can understand why it makes sense. It's just that these teams are just not going to have any type of home advantage for as long as they're going to be in the playoffs. If they find a way to win the Stanley Cup and do it with pretty much a lack of a home advantage, that would make it really impressive on their part. But imagine like a Toronto or a Winnipeg going to like round three and going from city to city after being in that bubble, man, like that's just, it is a bit of a bummer. I agree with you there. It just kind of sucks to see, but it's just necessary. It's something that just kind of has to happen because there's no way for it to make it work and have teams kind of go in and out of Canada if it gets to a point where they're playing round three between like Winnipeg and another East Division team. Like it's just not going to, It doesn't make sense. It's not at a position where it could work. And I mean, you could sit all you want. You can talk all you want about how the Canadian government has fumbled a few things. And a lot of people across the country have been frustrated with their respective governments, but it's just what it is right now. It's just a tough situation. And it's just one of those things that these teams are just going to have to live with, unfortunately. It sucks though.
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. I mean, I focus mainly on the fans and how it's going to be a different experience north of the border, not being able to, you know, watch, cover, witness the game going on in your own backyard. But it leaves the Canadian teams at a serious disadvantage, I think. Like, no matter what you try to simulate, if you're in an empty arena in Buffalo where you have no ties to and you have no familiarity with, when you go to, say, Colorado, and there's 10,000 fans in the stands and you come back to an empty barn that gives off no advantage whatsoever. And the other team actually might have more familiarity with because at least they've been in that visitor dressing room before. Like it doesn't give them any advantage or it just puts them at a serious disadvantage, you would think. But I think we knew the possibility of this cross-border travel was never going to happen. So I think that's probably why it's a good idea. And the most positive thing I think you can take from this is the fact that when those four Canadian teams go over the border, maybe they get vaccinated right away. Maybe they're in a position in the United States by that point. I mean, they seem to be flying through it at a rate we are just not even, we can't even imagine right now.
Light speed.
But maybe when they get there, the NHL is in a position by that point to have purchased vaccines, and they can line up, get it done, and operate in a far safer space. And if that is in fact an option, then you can't say no to it, despite the disadvantages or the inconveniences. That is safety overcoming everything else, or having precedence over everything else. And if the Canadian teams, by the time that they get to the playoffs, you can ensure their safety, or 98% ensure their safety, or whatever it is, I think that's an option you can't turn down.
Yeah, I agree. I just imagine that this year, of all years, the league has found a way to ensure that at least one team is going to be within a series of making the Stanley Cup. This and we like to bring up how every year since 1993, no Canadian team has found a way to win Lord Stanley's mug. And we are still in a pandemic, or whatever funny word you want to use for pandemic, I guess. And it's a good chance Toronto might be that team this year. I know there are a lot of people in Toronto who are really excited about this squad. I still say don't sleep on the Winnipeg Jets. And how amazing would it be if the Edmonton Oilers found a way to get through? We talked about the Montreal Canadiens early on in this podcast. If they found a way to just change everything and go a complete 360 into the playoffs, and they find themselves in a conference final, that would be an insane storyline. And their fans are likely going to have to just watch from home, and they can't be in an arena. And yeah, not even in an arena. Like, imagine if like fans start clamoring their respective teams to be like, hey, just like let us into the building to kind of watch on the Jumbotron. Like, I don't even know if teams are going to be able to do that. Like, that's going to be a bit of a bummer for them. It's a bit of a disappointment. But again, to bring up to my original point, like, this is just the price you kind of have to pay to kind of make things work in a pandemic. And I'm not opposed to the bubble. It's just, I think for fans, I kind of feel for them here. It's a bit of a bummer and a disappointment for a lot of people who enjoy the game in this country and want to see their teams do well. You can't help but not feel for the fans here.
Yeah, and what would be fair would be a bubble. If the Canadian teams have to cross the border and play in a bubble, then the Final Four is bubbled as well. But yeah, you mentioned,
I agree.
It. You mentioned it. There's going to be fans, more and more fans are going to be in seats in the United States as we go further along here. When we get to the playoffs, owners are going to be even more incentivized to want to push to have more fans getting through those doors. And it's going to happen, and it should happen, because if you're at the point where you can do that, which some municipalities can, because they're doing a very good job vaccinating their citizens, then there's no reason not to. And the NHL is not going to turn down revenue opportunities and pay to have a bubble erected somewhere in the United States. Like, it's just not going to happen. So Canadian teams are going to be at a disadvantage. The Canadian team that gets through is going to be at a disadvantage. But that's just the price of doing business in a pandemic, and the differences between two countries operating in a completely different space right now. Okay, we teased it off the top. Our RTR, our reason to return. It's our weekly segment now on the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. It's going to be called The Tire Pump, because, you know, you and I have fallen into the trap where we've been just, you know, trading compliments before. So instead of doing that and having our producers just shudder in disgust at the amount of compliments that are going back and forth, we are instead going to compliment people in the NHL world, or the hockey world at large. So the tire pump is just who we want to acknowledge this week. And Julian, inflate your first tire.
Shout out to the producers of our show who seem to shudder at the fact that, you know, two co-hosts can't just shower each other with praise. Like, come on, guys. I thought about this and I realized with the company that I work for, it is very easy for me to praise some of my coworkers. And I promise going forward, I will not make it a habit every week I am on the Yahoo Sports Hockey podcast.
Okay.
However, for this inaugural edition, I would like to pump the tires of two of my coworkers, if that is okay with you. The first one is Thomas Drantz, who has been all over the Vancouver Canucks and has been all over the COVID situation regarding this franchise over the last few weeks. And I think he has been doing some incredible work and really riveting stuff that you should read on The Athletic, obviously. The second person I'd like to praise is Ryan S. Clark, who wrote a story on this girl named Leighton Accardo, who unfortunately, back in November, lost a battle with cancer. However, the Arizona Coyotes franchise, she was a big fan of the franchise, and they were so enamored with her, they inducted her into their Ring of Honor over the weekend. Ryan wrote a story about Leighton and her ties to the Arizona Coyotes franchise just before the weekend, and it's a very moving and sad story that I also encourage you to read. So my tire pumps for this week, again, I promise I will not make it a habit to solely praise my athletic co-workers, but I felt that Thomas Drantz and Ryan S. Clark were two guys deserving of some praise for this edition of this segment.
Deserve praise for Drancer and Ryan. I'm gonna let it slide. I only gave you one tire to pump and you took the two, so a couple rules broken with media members and multiple media members chosen. But again,
give me an inch, I take a mile. Sorry.
Exactly. And unfortunately, you can take it in any direction you want at any time. So it's all fair when choosing which tire to pump. Okay, but for me, I'm staying in the Vancouver market, but I'm going to go with Vancouver Canucks head coach Travis Green. As brilliant as Drantz has been, I thought Travis Green's performance at his press conference superseded it a little bit. I just thought it was really poignant. I thought he did a perfect job of sort of illustrating exactly how the Canucks are feeling, how he's feeling, what he went through, what the situation is at large in Vancouver. I think he showed the seriousness of the virus. He showed the effects of the virus just like physically. He looked like he'd been through war. He seemingly still felt ill when he was talking to the media. He provided a worthy public message saying simply that you don't want to get this. And I think that's a reminder that everybody should be at least given. And from a coaching perspective, he supported his players at this immense paternal level, like comparing them to his children, saying that it like pained him to not be in a position to make them feel better because he just wasn't in that position. And then I also like that he put his foot in the ground saying the Canucks aren't coming back to fill out someone else's revenue. The Canucks are coming back to win hockey games. And for me, watching Travis Green's press conference, I had no doubt who the coach of the Vancouver Canucks should be moving forward. I think Travis Green should earn plaudits for his performance in front of the media, for what he said. He just looked like the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks right now and moving forward. And I think he deserves my inaugural tire pump just for that reason.
Yeah, I think that is a very excellent person who is deserving of such a tire pump. I really like this segment. This is genius. This is well done on your part.
I mean,
look what it's done.
You'd think I wouldn't need to be prompted, but shout out to one of my old producers, Sarah Jenkins, for saying, hey, you should probably put a little structure into the show because, you know, it's good for shareable content, which is true. And it avoids, you know, you and I rambling back and forth. But I think, you know, every radio program seems to have like multiple iterations of this where you're just choosing one side or, you know, giving an opportunity to speak on one subject. And why wouldn't we add that to our portfolio? The tire pump.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
By the way, I should give you a shout out as well for being able to handle that one episode of the podcast just on your own, breaking down the trade deadline. I was listening and I was like, wow, man, like this is really riveting stuff. This kind of served as like a radio audition, you know, if any opportunities like that ever came up. Not that you would ever want to, you know.
I remind you, Julian, you had one tire to pump and now you're trying to go for a third and I'm going to shut
you
down.
I'm wilding. I'm sorry.
Right now.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, we're going to be back again next Sunday. We're going to be trying to figure out what exactly we're going to do for the playoffs. I shouldn't probably tease it right now, but you might hear me solo. You might hear us more than once. I don't know what's going to happen, but we're going to try to give more full coverage, at least, of the Stanley Cup playoffs when we get there on the Yahoo Sports podcast. But for now, we'll leave it at that with what little topics we have for now and moving forward. And then we'll be back to the weekly cadence of having an interview subject on. And I will reserve who I'm having on this week. But, you know, we're adding to this show here. The tire pump, the solo editions, and we'll see what happens in the playoffs. But for now, we'll leave you. And Julian, you can bid farewell to the listeners to end this part.
Peace!
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.